He is the only Olympic gold medalist in the history of pro wrestling. And I find that to be absolutely amazing. There's never been anybody like him. There is a good chance there'll never be anybody coming along that'll be like him. And I'm happy to say that from day one, I was around this man's career in WWE. And I've watched him since he left WWE. It's my pleasure to have my friend Kurt Angle joining us today. Kurt, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Joe. It's great to be on your podcast.
You sound good. You sound like, you know, sometimes people say, "What are you doing a podcast, JR?" And I said, "Well, it gives me a reason to reconnect with my buddies, with my friends."
So, yeah, we were friends a long time.
So it's good, man. So yeah. I know how one of the things I went on Twitter and I asked people, "What do you want to ask Kurt?" Well, I think a lot of people, and certainly me, are how's your health? Because I know you had. Did you have ACL surgery, like, in the last several weeks?
Yes, I did, about a month and a half ago, and I'm doing well. I'm well ahead of schedule, and my knee feels great. It was something that I didn't necessarily have to do, but I just wanted to have it done to make sure. I don't like to be limited, JR, you know that, and I was a little bit limited with the shifting of my knee, and it was partially torn, so I went ahead and had it done so I could go 110%.
I know you're going to rehab like a crazy man because that's your style. I mean, see, people wonder sometimes, you know, and they ask, well, how can you tell the difference in, what, is there a difference in a world-class athlete and a worker in the ring? I said, well, hell yeah, there's a difference. the guy goes to 96 Olympic Games and he wins a gold medal. That means he's the best in the world at his weight at what he does. So, yeah, there's a difference, but there's a drive and a – and sometimes, Kurt, you know, that drive can be a blessing or a curse, you know, because I know there have been times when you've been so driven that you've worked hurt. And probably at the end of the day, someday when we're both – when I'm older, much older, and you're older, we can sit somewhere and say – boy, that was, why did we do that? Why did you do that? Or, you know, that was crazy.
Oh, yeah, JR, I think you're right. There is a certain drive in a world-class athlete, and, you know, it goes above and beyond anybody else. It's, you know, it's something I was really born with, but I was very blessed to have it. I continue to have it, and I will say that, yeah, I've worked hard. I've worked when I shouldn't have, and I also have done many things I shouldn't have done, even at this stage of my career. You know, I believe you said something a few months ago about me doing a moonsault off the top of the cage.
Yeah,
that's crazy. And, you know, at the age of 45, it's really crazy.
45 years old, moonsault. Here's what I would suggest. Ixnay the moonsault.
You know what, JR? I don't believe I will do it again. I'm learning slowly but surely that, you know, the better I work, the smarter I work, because I have the skills, I don't need to do that. And if it's not a finish, then, you know, if it's just a high spot, then why do it? Yeah.
I agree. And, you know, the other thing is that you come out of the Olympics in 96, you win the damn thing with a broken neck. You've got the it's funny how the USOC, the United States Olympic Committee, and the Olympic Committee in general, with all their drug testing, with all their, you know, making sure everybody's clean, it's okay for you to get pain injections to compete. And which I found to be, quite frankly, not that I didn't want you to win the gold medal, I did, but golly, it's kind of hypocritical sometimes that, well, you can't go smoke a joint, but we will give you some morphine or whatever the hell it might be in your neck to give you a shot so you can compete. I never have understood that. And I think that it kind of helps forward either pain medication dependency or whatever as you go forward because you're damaged goods.
Well, JR, I don't know when it ended or began, but I wasn't allowed to take pain medication. In 96, you were not allowed to take any kind of painkiller. The only thing I could do that would make it legal was to shoot injections of Novocaine in my neck so I couldn't feel it.
Oh.
I wasn't even allowed to take cortisone because it's a steroid. And so it was either Novocaine or I wasn't going to wrestle. And, you know, an hour later after my matches, I was in excruciating pain. It was a really difficult situation for me to be in, but I wasn't guaranteed I was going to make the Olympic team 4 years later. I had to do it then or I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it Novocaine. Well, here's how I look at that deal. I don't know what the difference is in the big picture, in a doctor prescribing you a legitimate dose of pain medication so you can manage the pain, or just somebody giving you a shot so that it just masks it. You're still hurt, but you can't feel the pain. To me, it's like, wait a minute. It's almost like semantics. It's like, well, we can't give you a pain medication to quell the pain and the hurting you're enduring, but we can give you some Novocaine because it'll mask it. To me, it's hypocritical.
It is hypocritical. You know, whatever Novocaine is, whether it's a numbing agent, it is masking the pain, and it isn't going to benefit you either way. You know, you mask the pain, you're just going to hurt it worse. And I think, you know, I'm very blessed not to damage it any worse. I did have some neck issues in WWE, but, you know, that didn't really stem from my broken neck back in the Olympics. It just had to do with some, you know, vertebrae that cracked, and then I had some disc issues in WWE where I had to have them shaved out so that it wouldn't be blocking my nerves because I wasn't able to lift my left arm. So I had some bad luck a few different times in WWE where I had to, you know, undergo a couple surgeries. And then the last one, I actually wrestled full time. The match with Undertaker at No Way Out in 2006, I had four broken vertebrae and I was wrestling as the champion.
Wow. Well, that's amazing what you went through and how far you pushed your body. Kurt, at this stage of your game, you know, and this is just cutting to the chase. You may never, probably likely, will never be 100% physically again. I don't know how you could be, quite frankly.
It's tough. I look at it. I don't have any neck issues now. I haven't had any in 9 years. The knee seems to be doing okay, but does my body feel the same? No. And also, I know you're going to cover this in a little bit, but, you know, being off of pain medication and staying clean and sober, you tend to feel your body a little more, and
sure,
it gets a little more painful and a lot of aches and things that you were masking prior to that. So, you know, do I feel the same now? No. But am I as healthy? No. But I am healthy enough to continue to go the way I want to go.
You know, how close can you get to be 100%? How close to that magic number of 100% you think you can get at this stage of the game, with the knee fixed, clean and sober? Because here's my take on it. If I got 80% Kurt Angle, he's going to be better than the majority of my roster. Can you get 80%?
Well,
can you get back to 80%, you think?
Yeah. The thing is, JR, it's really about, you know, it's not about the 80%. You know, me, obviously, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, I know that I cannot work 300 days a year anymore.
Right.
I know that I'm going to have to go part-time, whether it be wherever I go.
Sure.
It's really up to how I am, you know, my contract goes and where I sign and how many dates I sign. That's where I'll be able to give the 100%. At the times I need to. If they want to book me 300 days a year, it's not going to happen.
No, I wouldn't even consider that. That would be a non-issue. That would be a non-issue, quite frankly. Well, let's ask this question. Based on your health, based on your mental, where you are mentally, and your knee rehabbing, and et cetera, when do you honestly, without rushing it, think you'll be able to wrestle again this year?
I will be
this
ready, and that's a great question, Jared, because you don't really know. You know, with an ACL, it used to take 18 months, then it was 12, then it's 9. Guys have done it in 6. You know, I really believe that I will be ready by October, which will be 6 months. You know, it's one of those things. You know, in pro wrestling, you can come back from an injury and you can kind of protect it and still get in that ring. But you do want to be as close to 100% as you can. You don't want to go in there, you know, half messed up and re-injure your knee. So I don't want to rush it back.
No.
Right now, I'm ahead of schedule, and I'm doing things I shouldn't be doing right now. But the doctor is, you know, quite impressed with where my progress has gone. So I believe that I could be back in 6 months from the date of surgery, which would be in October.
Well, my only suggestion to you, and, you know, I've always had your best interest at heart from day one. I guess, you know, my wife been from Pittsburgh and you've been from Pittsburgh. I kind of felt that kinship. And I love, you know, growing up and breaking the business and working for Bill Watts. And then and my first traveling partner was Dan Hodge.
Wow.
You know, I had a love affair with amateur wrestling since I was a kid. So, you know, my only suggestion to you would be, from my heart, would be take your time. And there's no gun pointed at your head that you've got to be back in October, or be back when you're right. Be back when you're really ready, not when you want to rush into something. Because, as we all know, you know, I have a great respect for the wrestling business, but it's, you know, come on, it's fiction. We all know it's a showbiz. So they can cast your character to come back in October.
Mm-hmm.
Your character could be cast to come back in November. But just take your time. That's what I would say. I wanted to ask you, because I really haven't talked to you a lot about it since you went there. How has your tenure been in Impact Wrestling?
I'd say at the beginning, I really enjoyed it. You know, I was pretty much on the show, you know, probably 6-7 segments a night. You know, that's when they signed from 1 hour to 2 hours on Spike TV, is right when I signed. I'm not saying I'm the complete reason, but it is coincidental. But it's been like a roller coaster. I've had some great times, and there are times when I've been very frustrated. There are times when they did not book me right, and there are times when they booked me the right way. It's been a learning process, and I've really put my heart and soul to that company and wanted it to prosper. I've done, you know, a lot of people don't know this because, you know, a lot of people or a lot of fans are WWE fans, but I've had probably more better matches in TNA than I did in WWE, and my career in WWE was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of fans that never saw me wrestle in TNA. And it gets a little frustrating and upsetting, but it's understandable. You know, TNA has been able to survive up until now, and I know they've had their issues, but they're continuing to work hard to make this company prosper, and I'm doing whatever I can. I'm a team player. I've always been that way. I was that way with you and Vince McMahon and WWE.
Yep.
I'll do whatever they need to do while I'm under contract. But, you know, at times I've been really happy, and times I've been frustrated.
Sure. When is your deal in there? Do you mind telling me?
September 21st.
Wow. Well, that's coming. That'll be here before you know it, you know. So,
yeah.
So obviously, you returning to Impact is not a lock right now. It's not guaranteed.
No, I considered staying. They offered me a multi-year deal, but I told them I need time to think about it because this next contract is going to be my last.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be WWE or TNA, it's really this is it, and it's where I'm going to retire. And I want to make a big impression as much as I can. So I really have to think about the next few months and see where I want to go.
Well, smart. Yeah, you're going to sign that. You're only going to sign, Kurt, one last deal, one time. And where do you want your legacy to end? Where do you want it to be? And you know, I've been critical of TNA from time to time, and not in a way that I didn't want them to succeed. I've always wanted them to succeed because I have a lot of friends like you and others that work in front of the camera and behind the camera that I've known for years, and they're feeding their families. And the more places a wrestler or wrestling people have to work, the better it is for the business. It's better for the fans, you know. But I've often thought that their creative has sometimes been start and stop and start and stop. And I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but my opinion, you can agree or disagree, or go a different direction. I've always thought that they don't work hard enough or smart enough to differentiate their brand from WWE, which I think is imperative that they do. Does that make sense to you?
No, it does make sense. I believe, you know, they've tried things to make it different, you know, six-sided ring and other things that, you know, I can't remember right now. But at the end of the day, you know, I really believe it's about putting in time, putting in effort. I know you, JR, when you worked in WWE, you were working probably 18 hours a day. You know, we both know Vince McMahon works 20, 24 hours a day. The guy's just a machine.
He is.
You know, in TNA, when they got there at the beginning, I wouldn't say now they're really working hard to try to make this company really, you know, step up. But when I first got there, you know, it seemed like the office would be a ghost town at 4:30 in the afternoon. You didn't see that in WWE. You know, it was always packed. You could go there at night and people were still working late. So, you know, I believe it's a Southern mentality too. You know, when you work from 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 and when it's up, you know, work's done and you go hit the bars. But I think they're learning. And they're learning that you just can't work the 8-hour-a-day schedule. It's got to be nonstop, and you need to work as much as you can, as long as you can. If you want this company to survive, you got to do everything you can to make it survive. I know Vince McMahon went bankrupt 4 different times. What did he do? He worked harder.
Yeah. Well, you know, Vince's philosophy is some of his funnier things that I learned a lot from Vince, and we haven't always gotten along philosophically, and at least I had the balls to disagree with him in private. To disagree with him vehemently in public is disrespectful and not the way you do business. But in private, you know, we would have great discussions, philosophical discussions about our point of view in the business. But some of his fun things I remember him telling me, and you've heard him, sleep is our enemy.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a vampire. He doesn't need any sleep. And I say that in a very positive way. And he'll tell you that you can be sick at work just as easily as you can be sick at home. And just a few weeks ago, I had a health scare where I thought I had a stroke, and I went to the emergency room, and they took me to the stroke unit. I had an MRI done. I had two of them done in one day, and to my brain. They said, "Did you know that you've had a stroke?"
Wow!
And not lately. I said, "What?"
Oh boy!
I said, "No." He said, "You've had a mild stroke a few years ago. We can't tell you exactly the year, but you've had a stroke." So, I guess I woke up one morning not feeling good, and just went to work because I could be sick at work as easy as I could be sick at home. And you know, I worked through it. So I look at it back as kind of a macho thing. You know, hey, I'm Marshall Dillon here. I got a bullet in the arm, but I fought the Outlaws that day. So that's how it was. You worked in Impact with my longtime friend Sting for years. I love the guy. I think, you know, I started with him he was a rookie for Cowboy Bill Watts in the territory days back in the 80s. What's your thoughts on him, and do you think he will ever end up in WWE?
I hope so. I know that whatever happened in TNA at the end, I believe they couldn't come to an agreement. Now, I could be wrong. You know, I'm not Sting, so I really don't know, and nobody in the office is really going to tell me. But I heard they had a deal, an offer, and Sting didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if that's true or not. But Sting is a rare breed. You know, he's a great sports entertainer. I'm not going to tell you he's the greatest technician of all time, but he's a superior athlete. He's got a lot of charisma. He's got a great gimmick. He's a great guy. You know, I loved working with him. He's a pro. And you know that when he's out there, he's going to step it up. And no matter how old or young he is or was, Sting always went out there and gave his all, and he cared about it. He always cared about the business. That's what I loved about him. It was his passion. He still, to this day, does not want to give up. And if he's not in TNA, I would love to see him have one last run in WWE. I think a lot of people were hoping that him and Undertaker would meet at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know,
be pretty cool.
It would have been really cool.
Yeah, man, it'd be pretty cool. I can tell you this, as a fan, I'm still a fan, that would be one I just love to watch, because you'd have two artisans, two real, true professionals that would tell a great story, and it would be based on a story and not just acrobatics and the trapeze artist stuff. It'd be a real story that you could sink your teeth into and embrace. Moving away from TNA here, I'm just wondering, and this is a question a lot of people are asking, and I'm kind of curious about it too. If this was 1996 and Kurt Angle had just won the gold medal, first gold medal, freestyle gold medal in 220-pound wrestling in history, right?
Yeah.
Your first guy. And I know you didn't come directly to WWE, but let's simplify the story. It's 96, you're a gold medal winner. Would you go to UFC or would you go to WWE? What would be your pick?
I'm glad I did what I did. I think that Vince McMahon really did an amazing job with my character. Looking back now, I wouldn't change it. But if UFC was as popular in 96 as it was in 2003, there's no doubt I would have went to MMA circle.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Just for the because of the jocular, athletic, true, real athletic competition that was still in your system? And less showbiz and more steak than sizzle.
Yeah, I loved it. I've trained it before. I've always been into mixed martial arts. The guys that I wrestled to make the Olympic team: Dan Severn, Mark Kerr at Pride, Mark Coleman, the UFC champion. They were all my opponents when I tried out for the Olympics. These guys did really, really well. And it was back in the, you know, what I'd call the Stone Ages of UFC, but they were so tough, and they were thoroughbred athletes, and, there wasn't a lot of technique there because all they knew was amateur wrestling and how to knock somebody out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they adapted, they adjusted, and they were able to be their UFC champion or prize fighting champion, and it was really cool to see those guys have the success they had, and I saw myself doing the same thing, but when UFC offered me the deal, this is before Dana White owned it, they were offering me $15,000 a fight, and they wanted me to do 10 fights a year. The $150,000 for 10 fights a year, I don't think so.
No.
There's no way I'm going to put my body through that for $150,000.
No, and plus you got to pay your camp. You got to pay your
camp. Yeah, and I was going to be the highest paid guy at the time. Yeah. And I didn't understand that. Now, this is, pre-Dana White. But, supposedly that was a lot of money, and I did not understand how that was a lot of money.
I met Dana once. We had a great conversation, and he's a character, man. He is. He reminds me so much of Bill Watts as the alpha male. He reminds me so much of Vince as a builder of a brand, being outspoken. Having this giant set of balls that he didn't, he's going to tell you the truth. You never have to worry where Dana stands. And I admire that in today's politically correct world, that Dana White is a guy that'll tell you where he stands. And, I'm a big UFC fan. Do you still watch it today?
Yeah, not as much as I did, but I've really gotten into the pro wrestling. I watch Impact and Raw and SmackDown religiously. So, now that I have four kids and not two, I have to spend a lot of time with my kids, especially being clean and sober now. So it's really difficult for me to watch everything.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I do catch it on TV. And I wanted to tell you, I had two meetings with Dana White, and I will tell you, he says what he thinks, and he offers you deals, and you either take it or leave it. And, him and I, unfortunately, the first time, it just wasn't the... I just signed with TNA, and I asked if I could do both, which was pretty idiotic. And he said no. And I said, well, I just signed, and, I feel obligated. I really did feel obligated to TNA. So I refused it, and it was a lot of money. The second time was a couple years later, and he wanted me to be on the show with Kimba Slice. And the problem with that was he wanted me started. They were going to start shooting in 5 weeks.
Oh, the Ultimate! Like, whoa, the Ultimate Fighter.
Yes, the Ultimate Fighter. Mm-hmm. Me and Kimbo, and Dana was very fair to me. I can't complain. I feel bad because, you know, he was there for me, and he was willing to, you know, give me what I wanted, and you know, but 5 weeks to get ready, I just felt like I was setting myself up for failure.
Yeah, yeah. But nonetheless, he's an entertaining guy. He's a brilliant guy. He's a visionary. I just see a lot of Vince in him, and Bill Watts back in my early days.
I agree.
I think he's just he's a really a cool dude. Hey, what do you remember about when we signed you in WWE? What do you remember about the developmental program in 1998? You know, some of your early memories. You know, you come out of the Olympics, you're 2 years removed, you tried a couple of other things, broadcasting and some other stuff, and you finally found your niche. Because I'll tell people this. I tell people this all the time. There's nobody that we signed. It's funny how people will bitch at me for saying, I think WWE should recruit the world-class athletes, whether it be from wrestling or football or basketball or wherever it may be. But when you recruit an athlete that's been in a Division I program and has competed at the highest level, and you can check their backgrounds with their strength coach, their head coach, their position coach, their academic advisor, you can meet their parents or whatever the case may be, like you're recruiting somebody, you get a better guy in that locker room. That, because being in a pro wrestling locker room is damn sure hard and fitting in. So what do you remember about 98? Because I remember you going to somebody saying, God almighty, that Angle can do all the drills. He only show him once, and he's good. He's really good at doing all these drills. So that's part of the story. But what do you remember about it?
I remember how hard it was. It was Dory Funk and Tom Pritchard, and they had the camp, the Dory Funk Dojo. And, boy, you had a lot of stars there, future stars. You know, from Edge and Christian to Test to Prince Albert to, I mean, oh, my gosh. There are guys coming in now. I even got the opportunity, the rare privilege of working with Dr. Death, Steve Williams.
Oh, wow.
And it was hard. I would say this. As tough as that camp was, because we were bumping 300 times a day. Now, I know you have to learn to bump, but that's a little excessive.
Yeah.
And me personally, my first three bumps, I looked at my manager and I said, I can't do this. There is no way in hell I'm going to do this. It's impossible. I don't know why you'd want to beat yourself up like this. And my manager just said, stay in there for the day. And I stayed in there for the day, and, you know, I woke up sore as hell, but went back there with the drive I have. I went back there, and I kept learning. And what I did is I forgot everything I ever learned in amateur wrestling because it didn't really help me here.
No.
The bumping and the psychology. So I just took a new approach that I'm going to let people lead me, and I'm going to learn this while people are talking me through it or leading me through it, whether it be Dory Funk or Tom Pritchard or Christian. I worked a bunch of matches with Christian. He really helped me out tremendously. But a kid named Steve Bradley that was a rising star, he was one of my training partners as well. But it was hard, and it was the most difficult thing I've ever done, which is very hard for me to say. But pro wrestling, and I'll tell you this, JR, I don't care if you're a Division I athlete, world-class athlete. Yeah, you're going to get the better person that's better in the classroom and better on the field or on the wrestling mat. But in the long run, when you get in that wrestling ring, there are so many different aspects to it that sometimes you don't have to be that great of an athlete. You don't have to be, you know, that dedicated going to the gym all the time or having the drive. There are so many aspects like psychology and the bumping and letting people lead you. I'm sure we've had a bunch of athletes try out, and probably maybe 40 or 50% actually made it to, you know, whatever, the training camp or whatever.
Right.
You have to be a rare breed to get through and make it big in professional wrestling. It's a tough thing to do.
So you were challenged, obviously. How did you, I didn't know, you know, of course, Doc was one of my favorite guys. I gave the eulogy at his funeral, God bless him, and I didn't even recognize his last picture. He weighed about 180.
Wow.
And cancer just annihilated him. And the only thing I ever saw him lose to was cancer. But boy, he was a hoss, man. He was a
he was the guy I looked up to, because when I grew up, Dr. Death was not only a great football player and a great wrestler and great pro wrestler. He was all of them, and he succeeded everything he did. I never seen anybody have that much success, both in football and wrestling in college. He was an NCAA runner-up to Bruce Baumgartner,
yeah.
And the guy only got to train for 2 months that year.
Yeah.
And I believe he only lost by 1 point. That to me speaks volumes about the kind of athlete that Dr. Destine Williams was.
Yeah, I think he lost. You know, I think he lost to Baumgartner twice, Kurt. Once 2-1 and 3-2. And you know, Baumgartner was a little bit of a defensive wrestler, but he trained all year round. And he was one of the best heavyweights in the world, if not the best heavyweight in the world.
I trained with Bruce for 8 years, and I will tell you this. He whooped my butt. Now, there was an 80-pound size difference because I only weighed 209. He weighed probably about 290. But the point is, even though, you know, I wrestled him when he was Olympic champion, he was obviously 10 times better. But Bruce was really good in college. I mean, he was a two-time NCAA runner-up and NCAA champion. He was the favorite, and Dr. Death almost beat.
Bruce told me one time, I did a broadcast and never made air because the USA Wrestling people found out I was a pro wrestling announcer.
Oh,
but there was a duel between the United States and Russia that TBS was going to air. So Ted wanted me to be the play-by-play guy. Ted Turner wanted me to be the play-by-play guy for this duel. And Baumgartner was the heavyweight for America. And he wrestled a guy named David Gobicelli.
Oh, yeah. I've seen many of those feuds.
Yeah. He's a big heavyweight, big rangy guy. And
lanky, yeah.
Yeah. And so I broke the ice with Baumgartner by telling him, you know, I was from Oklahoma and Steve Williams. He said, let me tell you something about Steve Williams. If Steve Williams was a full-time wrestler, they wouldn't be talking about me. They'd be talking about Dr. Death. He said he would have won an Olympic gold medal without a doubt. He said, but he trained, like you said, a couple months a year because he was out either drinking beer or playing football. You know, that was Doc.
JR, when you split sports like that, you're never going to reach your potential. And, you know, he had the love for both of them, so he wanted to do both. But if he would have quit one or another, he either would have won pro football or he would have won or made the Olympic team in wrestling.
Yeah, I agree. And, folks, we're going to stop it right here with Kurt and pick it up again next week. We're going to get into the WWE years and, of course, the inevitable question that everybody has insisted that I ask Kurt Angle, and that is about returning to WWE someday. So plenty of great stuff coming next week in part two of my conversation with Kurt Angle.